Why so serious?
All the toys, all the time.
I am the game, and still getting trying to play you.
You know the rules. This isn't a toy.
But we bought it at the toy store.
We did, but the way I'm using it makes it an adult thing.
Are you ready to play the game?
Yeah! Welcome to the Toy Department with Matt Kolsky and Derek Madden.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, we are finally back. Toy Department time. I'm Derek Madden. He's Matt Kolsky. Kolsky, you were playing hurt last week. You're not playing hurt, I guess.
Man.
You were on the injured list last week.
I feel like you just took two shots at me. One before we started recording and one after we started recording. We're finally
Neither
back,
one
he
of
said.
Shot.
Before the show started, everyone, Derek Madden told me, let's get going because I'm important. Not me, him. And then now he's saying we're finally back after a long delay from Matt Kolsky losing his voice like a loser.
I said all of those things.
That's I heard it. That's what I heard. I mysteriously lost my voice last week. And I had to save it and drink lots of tea to be able to just do my job. So it felt irresponsible to tack on this podcast, and then now I'm legitimately sick today. I took the day off work yesterday because I was in bed all day, but hopefully you can't tell other than me just telling you, and let's get rolling. I'm playing hurt today.
Yeah, how's the tea?
Yesterday was my tea day. I don't love tea, you know, so given choices, I'll go coffee and seltzer all day long, which is what I'm on right now. Coffee and seltzer. Hopped up on coffee and seltzer.
All right.
But sometimes when you're really in the shit, you gotta hook up the tea, you know?
I've been we're already tangenting, but I've been doing some intermittent fasting.
Oh boy.
So you know,
how's
which
that going for you?
It's good. It's pretty doable. It basically means that I eat from 1 p.m. to 9 p.m. every day.
And is that making you healthy?
Yeah, it's supposed to be healthy.
Okay.
I don't know. We'll see.
And do you like have to drink special like hot pepper beverages in the morning or something, or you're just nothing?
No. Well, that's the thing is like you can drink no calorie-ish things. So mostly it's like coffee gets you through the morning, right? And then you eat at one.
I mean, that's basically how I live anyway. Coffee and seltzer till lunchtime.
Right. So it's kind of a doable thing. But I've been, you know, it's like it's the hour that we happen to be in right now, which is like 11:31.
Yeah. Yep.
That's kind of where I start getting a little hangry, and I'm trying to drink cold brew to get me through it. So,
yeah, I'm a big cold brew guy. Unfortunately, my ice maker in my sink has been on the fritz, or sink in my fridge has been on the fritz lately. So my cold brew, I usually have cold brew every morning, and now I'm like having to get it from other places. It's not ideal.
Definite third world problem, which is a nice segue into the White Lotus.
There we go.
How's that?
I think you meant first world problem, but yeah,
first
I'm with
problem.
You.
I did mean first world problem, yes. Yes, a show about first world problems and third world problems in a way.
Yeah, that's probably strong.
Second world
but
problems, maybe.
A show about first world problems and indigenous people problems. Although I have to say, I don't know that they did a very good job of addressing indigenous people problems so much.
Yeah,
as...
I mean, I think it was at least from what I understand. I've now read a lot, probably more than I should, to get ready to discuss this about creative choices in the show. But it was an intentional choice, I think, to have more of the island natives fade from view as the story concluded, right? Because it's definitely a story that is told through the lens of the first world folks coming onto the island, and it's this idea, right, of, you know, you can go on vacation is this idea of like getting away from the world, but not only are you taking the world's problems with you, you're taking your own interpersonal problems with you, right? Like that's kind of what the show is.
Yeah, and you're also creating problems for the people who live wherever you're visiting that you don't think is a real place to live, you know?
Right. That's the world's problems that you're bringing, essentially, right? So
Yeah, you know, in that respect, like, you know, if we're talking about that from a thematic perspective, I think my response is like, all right, I don't find that particularly interesting. Like, I get it. But I don't know that this was a particularly... I'm in a weird place with this show because I really enjoyed watching it almost in every minute of it. And I just, at the end, was kind of like, meh.
I'm not in that place. I loved it. And I thought the end was the right ending. You know what I mean? Other than the possible exception of you know, Quinn getting to stay to row on, you know.
I mean, that was completely absurd. And
I think even, you know, if you were to allow that is real life, like, the Mossbachers would be back on a plane within 4 days to come get him, right? Like,
less than that. They would, yeah. They would, the plane would within. Never take off. Okay. That plane would never take off without the kid on it.
Just saying, if you allow that it did, they're coming back for him real quick.
Somebody is, yeah. Probably dad.
Yeah.
Go get him, you know? But the other part about the end is like, Jake Lacy just killed a guy and everything's fine?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of, I think that was definitely a choice. And I think that's definitely a thing that could happen, particularly when it's, you know, when you say this person was an intruder in my room, you know what I mean?
You know what though? I don't think that could happen the way it, they yada yada'd it. He literally killed a guy. He killed a guy, and then yada, 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 he's going home with his wife, and the kid's rowing.
No, you see a scene where the cops are interviewing, and they shake his hand, and he walks off.
But what happened there? What was that conversation? Right.
Like, the Four Seasons, it's not really the Four Seasons, but it really
that
is.
That was yada, yada, hold on. How is that not a yada, yada? They did a montage where he shook a cop's hand and walked away.
Yeah.
That's yada, yada.
No, yada, yada is like, hey, we didn't think about it. We just put him on the plane. Right? Like,
that's what that was.
They're showing you that, right? That's what privileged and connected people, you know what I mean?
I think that needed more.
The luxury hotel in that instance is not going to press charges, right? They're going to put a new guy in the pink suit and have him waving to the next crop of people coming up and go on with their lives.
Yeah, I mean, that part I understand, but the part where, like, the cops just shake his hand and he walks away, you don't kill a guy and get on a plane that day. I mean, that's just not what happens, ever.
Well, I don't think we have to know. I don't know, timeline, maybe it was that day. I don't know. I do want to take a little bit of a bow, because when we first talked about the show at the beginning, I was very much on the, I don't think that's the wife in the box.
We both were.
Yeah. Were you? You were both on. Okay, fine.
I kind of feel like if we went back, we would find that I was the one who said it first and you weren't sure. But we don't have to check the tape.
I don't think that's true, because I really feel like from the jump, I was like, oh, they want us to think this is his wife in that box.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think we were on the same page. It clearly was not his wife in the box. They did, I believe, throw a red herring where the couple that was talking to him was like, I heard a woman got killed. And it wasn't a woman, obviously. But also, why are his remains? What?
I don't remember them saying a woman got killed.
Neither do I, but my wife said that, and she has a better memory than me. The bigger question to me is, where are his? Like, we don't know why his remains are even on the plane.
Well, they got to go somewhere.
Tahiti? Because that's where Jake Lacy's going, isn't it? Like, it doesn't make sense. He lives in Hawaii. Why would his remains? We have no indication of why his remains would be on that plane. Again, I really enjoyed watching this show, but I feel like it was a lot of churning gears just to end up with, God, white people. Am I right? And I agree. White people can be infuriating.
I don't think we ended up at God, white people, am I right? Like, the whole story is God, white people, am I right, right?
Yes, yeah. But, I mean, there's not much more than that.
It's God, rich people, right? It's rich white people.
Yeah, but there's really no more than that. And, like, the whole storyline with Paula and the poor kid who we see commit a crime and then just someone happens to mention he got arrested, but we have no idea what happened. Like, I found myself wanting something else when it ended. And I
love that story because Paula completely ravages this guy's life that she cares about. And, you know, is never, she's always acting in good intention. She just has no idea, you know, how toxic essentially her stuff is. Right. Which I think is interesting. You know what I mean? Because she's a person that sees herself, you know, in the, you know, as an ally and fighting for social justice and all of that, you know what I mean? So, I don't know. I really, and I think, you know, part of what you're getting at and why talking about the show, you know, is not necessarily just reducing it to its themes is that it was so well made. And I think that's why you enjoyed it so much. You had such a good time, even Agreed. Though some of the thematic stuff in the ending didn't resonate with you. Like, it was tremendously acted. And I think you have to shout out the score of yes. this show. It was in the same way that people kind of talk about, like, the Johnny Greenwood score and yep. There Will Be Blood and how yep. it created rude. This kind of tension. You yes. know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, they found a way to do this score that was really, like, native to the to the setting of the show, but that also completely ratcheted up the anxiety
yes.
That you could feel in, like, it was, I thought it was really an impressive feat.
I'm
it was
so glad. The best
score seen in a while.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought up Johnny Greenwood, because I think it's, you know, first of all, that score was incredible and not Oscar nominated, as I recall, which is a fucking travesty. But
yeah, I think it was a technicality or something, that there was, like, an original piece of piece of music that had been used from somewhere else that appeared in right. it or something. That,
whatever yeah. it was. Yeah. Stupid. But I never would have believed, if you had told me that this show was going to use Hawaiian music to create a similar tension to what Johnny Greenwood did with, like, high anxiety strings and synthesizers, I would have been like, go fuck yourself. There's no way. So I agree. That was an utter achievement.
Yep.
It was a total mood, and it managed to take you back and forth between, like, relaxing on the Hawaiian island and then, like, oh my God, what's about to happen? And, you know, almost especially for a show that I, in the end, felt like maybe it didn't quite come together, the soundtrack was part of what kept me completely invested in it all throughout. There's no doubt about that. I loved that. And also, you know, you sort of glazed past the acting.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the acting too. I mean, I think their performances are incredible. Steve and you genuinely Zahn. Care about some deeply unlikable people, right?
I mean, Steve Zahn, I didn't really know he had it in him. I like Steve Zahn, but that was a multi-layered, thoughtful performance. Like, I just didn't see it coming. I thought, oh, he's the dumb husband. Like, that's in the Steve Zahn oeuvre, right? We know Connie Britton's great, but the young lady from Euphoria was excellent, I thought. Jake Lacy in a non-typical role for him was excellent. Armand, whoever that guy is, was awesome.
Murray Bartlett is the guy's name.
And I don't know who played Belinda. I mean, we know Jennifer Coolidge is a genius, but whoever played Belinda was spectacular, too.
You know her. She's from...
I don't know her name, but she's in Insecure.
Yeah.
Yeah, just top to bottom, an excellent. Oh, and Alexandra Daddario too. Like, it's hard for someone who looks like that to be a shrinking violet.
Yeah,
and I thought she did an incredible job.
Yeah, I throw Molly Shannon in there as well.
Oh, of course. I mean, you know,
Mike White stuff.
Yeah, with, like, Molly Shannon and Connie Britton, you know, it's like, all right, well, we know Jennifer Coolidge. We know what you do,
yeah.
and there's no debating how good you are at it.
You know, this whole thing started with Mike White wanting to, because Mike White and Jennifer Coolidge are friends, and he wanted to write something for her. So it kind of started from that character, and then they grew the story out from there.
That makes sense, because she was probably the best character in the show.
Yeah. I think because of that, it was really well made, and I think that the, you know, doing this as sort of a 6-episode thing, apparently they're going to do another season kind of anthology style. They go to a new place and have new characters. But mm-hmm. I thought it was well paced. I was really excited to sort of see where the story was going to go. I thought, you know, I mean, it can be a bit cliche to frame the story with the body.
Yeah.
But from a pacing standpoint, it really worked, you know? And I don't, you know, as much as I want to pat myself on the back for not thinking that it was, you know, the wife, the newlywed wife character, I wouldn't have been like, oh yeah, that's Armand, you know, in the box. So
I mean, I said that's Armand when, like, the moment I realized it was him in the box was the moment Jake Lacy walked into the room when he was already in there having taken a dump in his suitcase.
Yeah.
I was like, he's got the knife out. He's gonna kill him.
Yeah.
Armand's
descent and his whole journey was great, and just the feud between those guys and the subtlety involved in that, in just kind of the two of them constantly trying to get one up on each other while smiling to the other's faces.
And I guess this is what I'm saying, right? I wish that the overall, it feels like there was more attention to the micro face-off, as an example, between those two guys than there was to the macro concept of what on earth is happening here. And I kind of wish it had been paid equal attention, but like you said, it's incredibly well made, incredibly well acted, and I'm not trying to crap on it. I think just like the way it ended made it a B+ instead of an A for me.
Mm. I am. I would definitely say A- at least. I'm impressed with HBO that they, you know, continue to be able to roll these out. And clearly, if you know anything about the genesis of this, it literally exists because the president of HBO was like, man, it's a pandemic and we're stuck and I'm going to have nothing. Can you make me something real quick that we can film in one location?
Yeah.
And so to start from that and then come up with this, you know, it's 6 weeks ago. We were like, man, what are we going to do with Sunday nights now? and that was quickly forgotten. So good on them. And now that should be enough, hopefully, to roll us right into Succession, right?
Succession, Euphoria, I think they're all coming back, right?
So good for HBO. Okay, let's jump into some other stuff real quick. Let's talk about F-Boy Island, which has also apparently been renewed for a season 2.
Yeah. First of all, I'm loving it. Second of all, how many episodes have you watched?
I watched 2.
Oh, okay. Well, we're like 9 into it.
Yeah, so I feel like you and I, we're a little bit mirrors here in like, you know, I've kind of abandoned the Bachelor franchise in general. But, you know, there was a point where I was like, you know, I like The Bachelor, and you were like, you're just hard pass. You know what I mean?
I'm still a hard pass on The Bachelor.
You're still a hard pass. That part hasn't changed for you. I've also passed now for, you know, for various reasons. But I guess I don't get why you're like, Bachelor, no, 2 thumbs up for this trash. Because I am so out on F-Boy Island. Like,
because
two episodes was fucking torture for me. like this show is so poorly constructed. And can we just start from F-Boy Island? Like, I get that you know, what, maybe you don't want to put fuck in the title of your show that you have to put on, you know,
no,
what I mean?
But saying F-boy over and over again is infuriating. I totally agree with that. You get used to it, but there's no reason they shouldn't have just been calling everybody a fuckboy. Literally, nobody who shouldn't hear the word fuck should be watching this show. So just say fuckboy. Hopefully they'll do that in season 2. You can call it F-boy Island if you don't want to have fuck in the name, but like, for fuck's sake.
But just say fuckboy.
Say fuck.
Because everybody, right, like it's so, it immediately, and I understand that seems like a small thing.
No, it's annoying.
It takes you out of the reality of the situation because you understand everyone who's saying F-boy is entirely conscious that they're on camera. And like it's just this weird tell that hangs through the whole show.
Well, okay, but they play into it, and I'm not sure through 2 episodes. Have you seen what happens when they get sent off?
They hinted at it, but I haven't like gotten the whole thing.
It gets funnier. The show gets funnier, and here's what I would say.
That's another thing, because that was another big problem of mine. I found it to be like, especially for a show that's, you know, made by a comedian, I found it to be really unfunny, like really unfunny.
Oh, I thought it got funnier and funnier as it went on, and I think the key to this show, if you're into this sort of stupid shit, the key to this one is that Nikki Glaser gets the show. Like, Nikki Glaser is funny and understands what's happening here and handles it incredibly well, I think. And these people are laughable.
That's definitely a different show from the one that I've watched to this point.
Really? I thought she was pretty good early, but as it progresses, like, it's funny because she's funny and she gets the show. So I have enjoyed it. I'm not going to tell anybody this is must-see TV, but these people are laughably jackassish, and that's what I enjoy, is laughing at idiots. That's why some of these shows, that's why Love Island I can enjoy. I also love, you know, if people really find it. I'm not sure that's happening on F-Boy Island. It's mostly just people being idiots, but I laugh at it and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I mean, look,
it's
I'm not
totally disposable.
Some disposable, right? I mean, like, you know, I love Too Hot to Handle. Have embraced Love Island to varying degrees. I'm not against, you know, trashy disposable romance TV, obviously. Like, you know, I had fun with Bachelor in Paradise until it just became untenable. So, but would you not say, at least from just a pure, forget the problematic stuff with The Bachelor for a second. Like, aren't those shows better made from just a, you know, constructing reality, like better produced, better executed, you know, than like these kind of things, which you can tell are sort of clearly made a little bit on the cheaper. You know what I mean? Like, just the narratives are better. Like,
no.
All of it. I just think it's better television.
Yeah. But you're talking about a bunch of stuff that does not appeal to me at all.
Yeah, that's fine. I'm not saying anyone needs to be on board, because you can't. Eventually, you can't separate the problematic aspects of The Bachelor from what you're watching.
But it's not even. I'm not even talking. Like, forget. I'm perfectly comfortable putting the problematic parts aside for a second. When you say that show is better made, you're talking about, like, qualities that do not appeal to me.
Mm.
You know, like the cutscenes, the storytelling about people's actual lives, none of that appeals to me in the slightest. I don't want to hear.
I'm not necessarily talking about even the cutscenes.
Well, I'm not sure. When you say it's better made, like, I assume you're talking about a level of polish, essentially. And
a level of polish and storylines within the show. And often, right. Honestly, I mean, from what I've saw, the Bachelor can be funnier. Like, The Bachelor has a sense of humor.
I don't think The Bachelor has nearly the sense of humor of this show. And there's too much people talking about their lives like I'm supposed to care. Like, this show, when people talk about their lives, I'm like, you stupid idiot. Look at your stupid life. And that's the experience I want. I don't want to have my heartstrings tugged about, like, the woman who's about to get eliminated and her, you know, disabled sister or whatever. Like, I'm not interested.
Well, yeah, I'm not talking about NFL draft style manipulation, but I do.
Well, but I
think that's a difference from us, is like, I do like to care about the people in the show that are ostensibly falling in love. And I do not care about anyone on the show. That's another problem for me, as I felt like the three ladies.
I think that's the, I think you just hit cutouts. It. I think this is the, you know what I mean? This is it. This is where we differ. You nailed it, I think, because I have no interest in caring about these people. In fact, I'd prefer to, like, what's her name? CJ, I want to say. There's three ladies on F-Boy Island and a bunch of dudes. And CJ, I believe is the woman's name, is the biggest fuckboy on the island. She is a fuckboy to her bones.
Two episodes, I got that. Yeah.
Yeah. And that, to me, is hilarious. Like, watching her be a fuckboy and then complaining about fuckboys, to me, is high comedy. So that's what I'm here for, not to care about these people. And I guess, look, you know, sometimes with Love Island, I do come to care about those people. But I still want the narrator making fun of them. I don't want to hear.
You care about them in a disposable way, right?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, lot to handle. Like, over the course of enough episodes, you sort of feel like you know those people on that who are stuck on that island, right? And you're at least mildly invested in them. And then you like, I couldn't tell you any of their names now, though, right? Like, right. You cease to care,
right? So. I mean, there's a couple of couples from old Love Islands that, like, you know, I'm still into Cam and Amber, but put that aside. The reason it appeals to me is because it's just people being like chaos magnets and then a guy making jokes about it. You know what I mean? There's no Chris Harrison or whoever the hell they replaced him with, like, trying to pretend like something real is going on. That stuff takes me out of it.
Mm. Yeah. See, the F boy takes me out of it more than that stuff does.
It's funny. This sort of mirrors, some of our musical taste.
Yeah, I would agree. All right, we have a challenge to get to, though, so let's just real quick talk Suicide Squad.
Do we want to slip in Mr. Corman or no?
I'm going to say no. Are you okay with not talking about Mr. Corman?
Yeah, it's fine through three episodes. Fine. I'm not totally sure what it is, but I do really like Joseph Gordon-Levitt. So the fact that he, like, created it and designed the structure of the season, I think I'm going to watch it.
Yeah, me too. And I would say if you were a fan of his, it's probably worth a watch. But I'm also not going to sit here and tell you it's amazing or must see.
I think that's about right.
Yeah.
What about Suicide Squad? I'm fascinated to see what you think because I loved it, but it's exactly the stuff I like, and it's not necessarily the stuff you like.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like my quick take is that this really should be, you know, knowing where I'm at. Generally on superhero movies, this is kind of the optimum, right? Like, this is theoretically you've got a strong writer and a decent cast of actors. It's not the same cliche origin story that we've now gotten 78,000 times. All of that stuff is kind of in place, and I think some of that's true, but ultimately it kind of still left me a little bit like, all right, fine. It's way too long. The plot doesn't always make sense, but it was enjoyable enough. Like, I'm not down on it. It was watchable. I had a decent time.
I got to say,
I don't understand why people get excited about these things. I just don't.
I mean, first of all, I think if you want to just answer the question simply, think about what your reaction is to a lot of superhero movies and then how much more you like this one. And then imagine being someone who likes superhero movies, how much more you might enjoy this one. I think that's about on point. I also think this is not intended to be any less disposable than Fuckboy Island, right? So, like, that feeling that you have that, like, you're not sure why it's so exciting, that's okay. There's not a lot to it. It's just a good time. And I guess the one place I would differ with you a little bit is, like, I think it's better than a decent cast.
Yeah. Sorry. I was shorthanding that. The cast is very good.
And you know what? Margot Robbie's friggin' Harley Quinn is... Like, I'll sign me up for the next one. She's great.
I thought she was very good in this. I don't know how anyone who saw the first movie could be like, sign me up for the next one.
Oh, I thought I have a feeling if you go back, you'll find that was just as good as this.
No.
I quite enjoyed it. But That's beside the point. I think as far as this goes, it's much better than the other Suicide Squad movie.
Yeah. Well, that movie had that sort of grim DC vibe, right?
And that's the other thing I wanted to say is, like, what DC has done successfully here is make a fun film, which, especially if you didn't like the Birds of Prey, they had not yet successfully done. And it gives me some hope that, you know, this next wave of movie, like, you know what I don't want to see is a really depressing version of The Flash. You know, I don't want to see The Flash shot in darkness where nobody's laughing. I would like a bright, enjoyable version of The Flash with an actor playing The Flash who I think is hilarious and very enjoyable. So this gives me some hope that we are not going to be stuck in, like, oddly darkened tones for time immemorium in DC films. And that maybe is as big a boost as anything.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't know if they're going to keep hiring James Gunn or not, but...
Yeah, but just the attitude to embrace a different type of film shows me something. But no, I mean, James Gunn is not directing The Flash, but I think it is somebody good. I can check that.
Yeah. Yeah. Look, it's a decent time. I think it does get a little bit rote, kind of, you know, joke, ultra violence. The violence is the most creative thing happening in the movie.
Oh, there's some incredible action.
But it does take some unexpected twists. It is at times funny, and like you said, the acting is good. So, I'm not here to crap all over Suicide Squad, but I wasn't jumping out of my chair either.
That's fair. The Flash is directed by someone I've never heard of, so take that back.
Okay, fair enough.
We'll find out. But Ezra Miller, who plays Barry Allen, like, he's funny. You know, I want it to be fun.
Yes, I think that much we agreed. I don't understand what the point of making comic book movies are if they're not at least kind of fun, or right? And fun can just be engrossing, right? Like The Dark Knight's not a fun movie, but right. You're happy it exists because it's engrossing.
Yeah, and I think there has to be a recognition from somebody high up at the studio that, like, in terms of whether it's fun or not, it's kind of important to be faithful to the comics. Not because you need to, you know, fan service comic book fans, but because the characters are written that way for a reason. Like, Batman is dark. Harley Quinn is not. And it's not just random. You know what I mean? The Batman character, you can make a dark film around and take it seriously. If you tried to make a dark film around Harley Quinn, it'd be impossible to take it seriously.
Right. And you saw, I think Superman is a good example of that,
exactly.
Right? Like, when you take Superman, who is not a dark character, and make him dark, you get a grim movie. But, you know, the DC
or
has
Aquaman,
a problem.
Right? Snyder,
yeah, or Aquaman's another one, right? That should be – Aquaman should be the goofiest of them all,
exactly.
Right?
It should be silly. That's why his costume – being all tough was like, I don't know what we're doing here.
Yeah. Well,
like, just put him in blue and yellow, for God's sake.
Like, the Snyder movies make money, right? And they all have that grim, dark, you know?
Yeah. So. I mean, but that to me that's the sports fallacy. You know, that's the sports owner fallacy. What are you talking about? We could do this better. We're making tons of money. Okay. But if you did it better, maybe you'd make more money.
Right. But that fallacy exists, and it exists in Hollywood for sure.
Yeah, yeah, but I just it doesn't make me satisfied.
Do you know how many movies this summer were not were original IP that came out this summer from Hollywood Studios?
Well, I mean, I don't know how that's measured in terms of what counts.
Well, there's like only four or five Hollywood Studios. They have a slate. So,
okay, but so like an A24, does that count?
A24 does not count, no.
Right. So then this is not
the major studios. Not the independent.
Right, but I don't think that's what, two? This is not interesting to me.
One. Yeah, one is the answer. One.
What was
one
it?
Original piece of IP. I'm already forgetting, but I tweeted about it a couple weeks ago.
Okay. Well, I guess what I would say is, like, that does not represent a huge shift. Like, independent movies have always been the place where you get original IP.
I mean, no, that's not true. They weren't always the place where you get original IP, but they have definitely become the place where you get the original IP. I would not dispute.
Well, I'm not debating that there's been, like, more of a shift, but, you know, some of the fact that it's just one this summer is definitely a pandemic. And does Netflix count? Does HBO Max count? Like, I just
the Ryan Reynolds movie Free Guy was the one.
Okay.
Just so you know. Okay.
Well, so is that proof that original IP is not necessarily better?
So anyway, let's get to challenge, right? That's what we're here to talk about.
Yeah,
we got a whole bunch of challenge to do. Spies, Lies, and Allies. man, there's a lot to chew on this season. We got a whole new group of rookies. We've got a new setting. I my 30,000 foot view from three episodes is that all the ingredients are in place here for a fantastic season. Like, I really like the way they've set it up. You know, it's not right. It's an individual game. You've got these sort of world versus America dynamic. You have a outnumbered veterans versus rookies dynamic happening. You've put them in a bright and sunny place post-pandemic, which is encouraging an insane amount of hookups and connections. And you're throwing these teams where it's very easy to switch partners. The structure of the game is really solid. That said, I don't think that we, through the first two full episodes, I don't think things have really blown up yet in like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, woohoo, the challenge has done it, you know, yet. So I think that potential is there, but I don't know that we have seen it to this point. Would you agree with that?
I think I would generally agree with that, but I would not say it in a bad way. I would not say it in like a hasn't really connected yet. I feel like it's just building. And I think it takes a little while to get the truly explosive moments because you got to sort of build character and situation in each season. But I will say this. I love some of the rookies. I mean, love some of the rookies.
Yeah, they did a great job with casting.
The two Romanians, Emmy and Emmanuel, are...
You mean Vampire Guy?
Yeah, Vampire Guy and Crazy Emmy, who has already made herself the main character of the show in two episodes. I'm blown away at what tremendous characters they are. Kells, who was eliminated in episode two, is definitely coming back because he's good. And he completely saw through the entire gambit that the veterans pulled on him, but he still couldn't stop it from going down.
Yeah, and I have some thoughts about that. First, I just want to say I'm Team Nigeria in terms of...
Oh, God, Esther and what is it, Tasha?
Tasha, yeah.
Oh, tremendous. Man, fantastic.
Esther is... it's like... I don't want to make this too facile a comparison, but I do feel like it's like almost like the gods gifted us with another big T, right? Like, you've got someone who is just a tremendous personality... has already figured out like social game is really important.
Yep. Although I gotta say, like,
a good partner, like, she, yeah, there's just a lot of Big T vibes for me here.
Totally. Although she looks bigger and stronger than Big T, so I wonder if she might not be able to pull her weight a little more in the physical stuff. But yeah, she's great. Again, Emmy is a whirlwind and a complete disaster and totally out of control, and I just love her so much. She's like an exposed raw nerve of emotion. And she can't keep herself under control in the slightest. I love it. It's beautiful to watch. Also, they played in the elimination in episode two was basically a version of the magnetic fishing game that my 2.5-year-old just got, which I enjoyed very much.
I really liked that elimination. It was smart of them to. You know, have this sort of one that kind of leveled the playing field physically. Because I do think a Kells versus Ed, you know, like Hall Brawl would not have been super fun to watch. You know what I mean?
Kells looks like the most serious physical specimen there, you know, on par with Fessy and CT.
Yeah, it's clear why they came for him. And can we just say, I hereby propose... that you and I refer to Ed as Ed of Easttown henceforth.
That it's funny. When he came on, I was like, is that a Southern accent? And
oh, no, I
Joey,
knew where
my
I
wife, like, Philly, baby. Yeah, who is the accent specialist. Like, she's a linguistics master. like we'll be watching random shows and she'll be like, oh, that guy's definitely Australian. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's American. I can hear it. And she's like, no, that's an Australian guy doing an American accent. And then she Googles it and she's right every time. And so she was like, I think it's Philly. And then as you listen a little bit, you can tell because the giveaway, that thick Philly accent has a little Southern to it, but it just goes away on some words. And that's how you know it's Philly.
Yep. Yep. I want people to keep offering him water.
Yeah. We need to hear him say water as much as possible. But Ed of Easttown is a good one. And look, Kells would have broken him in half, but he's not a baby. Like, I would give him a decent chance against most of the guys up there because he's pretty thick and he seems just crazy enough to go all out and also pretty clever. Although, I got to say, mentioning your Ivy League engineering background within 5 minutes of joining the show is a little obnoxious.
Yeah, I love it. You know, the really difficult part of that, and I don't know, I'm trying to look it up now.
Do you also, Derek, do you also have an Ivy League engineering background?
I do not have an Ivy League engineering background, but I do have an Ivy League degree, and I'm gonna guess it's from the same university. That's because
wait, is that a shot at you, Ed, and the university you potentially both went to?
A little bit.
Because sure, if it was anything but Cornell, he would have said what school. Is that what you're saying?
that is a tip. Also, just the eagerness to let people know that you went to an Ivy League university.
Right.
It's very Andy Bernard, is it not? You know, engineering is one of the things Cornell does really well. I'm pretty sure it's the largest engineering school in the Ivy League. So, you know, I'm just putting two and two together that there's some real Cornell vibes coming off the head.
That's funny. Did you watch The Circle?
I did not. I was just about to ask you that. So,
yeah, I didn't either. I think my sister may have. So I'll have to check in with her.
I'd like to know more.
Oh, man.
And you were all right. Like, you know, it's not like Ed is some physical wimp. Like, he's jacked. He's just jacked and tiny, whereas Kells is equally jacked and huge.
Right.
So it's interesting to me because Jeremiah among the rookies is flying under the radar a little bit. I feel
sorry,
like.
Quickly. Yeah. You nailed it.
Yeah, Cornell. Then yep. Nice.
Yep. Cornell track athlete.
Yeah.
Hometown Conshohocken, Pennsylvania.
Conshohocken, I believe, is how you say it.
Whatever.
Not the first Cornellian on the challenge, right? I believe Evan was a Cornell engineer as well.
Really?
Yeah, sure was.
Canadian Evan?
Yeah, Canadian Evan.
Wow, that's a shock.
Yeah, I definitely went to school with some dudes like that. It did not surprise me.
That's funny.
But anyway, I was just saying, like, Jeremiah, right, is a former football player. And nobody's gunning for him. Like, nobody's even really noticed or talked about him yet. I feel like that is a testament to the physical specimenness of Kells, right?
Yes. Yeah. Jeremiah also seems like he understood coming in that drawing attention was not worthwhile.
Yeah. Yep.
Right? Like, he's barely been on screen.
It's a hard choice to make as a rookie, though, right? Because you need some camera time to be the kind of person that they want to invite back, right? If you are CT, who I think is really conspicuously flying under the radar right now,
yes.
Like, he's gone back to that game. CT is a returning champ who went and got in shape. And it's a guy that people have just completely gunned for in seasons past, and he's barely been mentioned to this point, right?
Well, it's funny. In the challenge, historically speaking, right, there are two ways to be, like, two ways to create fear in people. Like, there's two different ways for people to be scared of you. One is, I'm scared that you could be something down the road, so we're going to try to get you out now. And the other is, I'm so scared I'm going to stay as far away as possible for as long as possible. And I think CT has pretty firmly crossed into the latter.
Yeah, well, you're never going to question CT's game strategy, right? Like, I mean,
but I mean, people just like people were scared of Kells because, like, well, he's big and he might be a threat later. People are scared of CT. Like, I'm not going after him. I'm just going to end up eliminated.
Yeah, Fessy gets some of that.
Yeah, exactly. Fessy has sort of reached that level too. Although I, that guy.
How impressed with themselves were those two?
and the fact that Fessy's like, that's how you execute a plan. It's like, is it? You have Josh act a fool, and then that it serendipitously works out for you. That's a plan executed.
In fairness, Kells was impressed. Kells respected it.
He did, but he only respected it because he saw through it entirely, you know? I think his respect was, man, I knew exactly what they were doing, and I still couldn't stop it.
Still pulled it off, yeah.
That's because a bunch of stupid idiots are in there, too, who didn't see right through what they were doing, right?
Isn't that the thing hovering over this game right now is that I don't think that the rookies have caught on to this veteran alliance, which seems – I mean, how? Isn't that the first thing you're thinking about is rookies got to stick together and then they're going to try to pick us off? And like, wouldn't you notice that they keep the rookie teams keep getting thrown in?
They talked about it. They talk about it a lot, but then they don't do anything.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's like, I don't understand other than this idea of, well, I just have to not be the slowest antelope. You know what I mean? In the herd. Right. I don't understand why they go. Why would you go along with, Fessy and Josh's plot if you're a rookie, right? When you're going, it's like they're just trying to take your numbers down so that they can control the game. Like, why are you being an active participant in that?
Right, and it's individual votes, so you don't have to vote with your partner, right?
Yeah.
So, no, I mean, I agree, but it's just they never can organize quickly enough is usually what it comes down to. And I imagine that – being a rookie is sort of a whirlwind experience. Like, you're there and all of a sudden you're throwing stuff off a helicopter and then someone just puts you in elimination and oh my God, you're gone.
Yeah. And I don't think this was strategy, but I think it worked out for the vets in that. I think if you're asking me who were the two rookies that may have led that charge of let's put a stop to this, it might've been Michaela and Renan who got eliminated in the first episode. Right. Like, those two already seem to be like, hey, us rookies got to stick together. They're coming for us. They're getting scammed. And then now they're gone. So,
yeah, I mean, I think clearly Michaela was trying to be an organizer and that's what got her sent home.
The fact that the other two survivor rookies, that Tommy and Michelle have not. Right. Like, this ought to be your game. Right. And there are obviously people who played Survivor in other countries, right, that you would think would have grasped this by now. I don't know.
I guess, but, you know, so far, those two, at least, the American ones, have been true to the name of the show, more so than the show, and they looked at Michaela and saw the bus about to roll her over, and they just, like, pushed her a little further under.
It's better you than I.
That's exactly how it went. It's a tough one, but that's not a huge surprise to me.
Yeah. You know, the other part of this whole, like, look at us, we're master chess players thing, in the end, it worked out for them. But I don't, like, you know, because but I think it's largely because they got lucky and got a puzzle elimination. Like, I don't understand what if your whole aim is to get rid of Kells,
that's
your secondary aim is to get rid of tough rookies.
Yep.
Why are you picking Ed to go down there?
The thing is, because the big guys are on their team like that. That's the problem with all these theories. And you're right, they did get lucky. But the problem with this approach generally is, like, you're always throwing in a team you're afraid is going to be really great, but then you're friends with the other great teams and you don't want to put them in to take them out. So it always ends up being the person you're trying to eliminate against someone who's not that likely to eliminate them, right?
Right. And if you throw in two badasses, you're also guaranteeing that one badass comes back angry.
Right. So really, this is what you're hoping for when you make this sort of move, is that someone who is less intimidating gets a lucky break with what the elimination is and beats him. And you know what? Like, I don't think we should, like, we should not assume that a more physical elimination would have worked out in their favor, because I would say that the discrepancy in female strength was nearly as big in the other direction as, you know, the Kells to, like, Emmy is a lot more of a force than Tracy appeared to be, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm forgetting the name of the game, but you know, the ones where you like grab the stick and wrestle, basically.
Pole wrestle, yeah.
Pole wrestle, yeah, yeah. Like, I'm imagining that, like, Emmy would have destroyed Tracy.
Correct.
And that, yeah.
Correct.
And then, you know, and Kells would have destroyed Ed, I would think. Although that's a game where sometimes leverage can, you know, like Derek, I think, was a pretty good pole wrestler, right?
Yep. And you know, it depends what you're good at, but on its face, they would have split any physical elimination, you know, girls to Emmy, guys to Kells. And then it would have just depended, like, who got the coin flip for the sudden death, right? So it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the worst team to send up against Kells. And it worked.
Yeah. I thought the daily challenge from this episode was one where I imagined it looked amazing, like, on a storyboard. You know what I mean? But, like, in practice, wasn't all that exciting.
It wasn't as entertaining as you would have hoped, like, on its own. I'll say this, though. The strategy was interesting. And beyond all of that, if we're just grading the daily challenges in terms of creating the feel of a spy movie, I think they're doing a great job.
Yeah, like, it's clear, that's what I mean. Like, conceptually, that was a fantastic challenge. You know what I mean? I just don't know that it provided a lot of, like, watching it wasn't a great experience. Although I liked the elimination a lot, and that was brand new.
I thought the elimination was great. And like I said, reminded me of the magnetic fishing game. But you're right. It was not the most entertaining daily challenge, but I do think it was perfect for the theme. And I think just in general, they clearly set on what I'm assuming is going to be a trilogy of spy-based challenges. And so far through one season and two episodes, like, they've just done a remarkable creative job of coming up with very spy-ish challenges. As silly as it is to toss bags of alleged gems out of a helicopter, it very much feels like a spy movie, right? Even if it wasn't the most entertaining thing, it super felt like Mission Impossible.
Yep. The next one looks like it goes very wrong. So I'm excited to see that. I mean, I guess I shouldn't be excited to watch people get hurt, but it looks like a lot of people are going to get hurt.
That's a weird way to bring that up, but yeah, good time.
All right. So how do you feel about the various romantic entanglements that seem to be developing into the house? And are you with me that it also seems like there's a lot more of them than in past seasons?
Well, I mean, than in the last few, right? Because it's been a handful of seasons since a really explosive hookup house. I'm picturing the one where
people just got very serious about the game. You know what I mean?
They did, but you can bone and also be serious about the game, as Nelson has proven. I did you notice that the name of episode 2?
It was like Bertha or something, wasn't it?
Correct. And you realize what that is?
No.
Bertha is what Ashley insisted on calling Berna after Nelson was hitting on Berna.
Oh, no, I didn't. I totally missed that. That's great.
Yeah. That, whatever you want to call it, love triangle. Look, man, any scenario that sets up Hurricane Ashley is a good scenario for my money.
Right. Well, you know, we were just talking about Nelson being serious about the game. That's kind of what I mean. It's like, if you're serious about the game, are you putting yourself in a situation that invites Hurricane Ashley to rain directly down on you?
Well, I mean, how smart are you?
Well, I think we've established. Oh, man. Nelson always puts me in this weird spot because I do genuinely enjoy him and I think he's a very good person. And so, but he's constantly sort of forcing you to point out that he's just not that smart. It's like,
that's okay.
Yeah.
You people know, can like, be no, totally good people and just not very smart. Yeah. But you can see even from his friends' reactions, like Corey is like, I literally don't know what to say about this dude anymore. Right? And Corey's not exactly a... Corey didn't go to Cornell, okay?
No, he did not.
But,
no, he's, but he has gone to the challenge school of romance gone wrong.
Yes.
He's definitely a graduate of that.
Yeah, and just in general, like, he's not nearly as big of a doofus as Nelson is. And so it's funny to watch Nelson live his dumb life and Corey be like, ah, God, I love him, but he is dumb. He is like, Nelson is legitimately shocked that Ashley is upset. Legitimately never saw it coming. And it's like, yeah. How, bro? How?
The whole house saw it coming.
Every single person in there saw it coming. Like, Amanda saw it coming. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amanda, who is pursuing Fessy right now,
right.
Saw this disaster coming.
Let's talk about Fessy, because I do think, you know, obviously not everyone's favorite player.
No, but can we just say before anything else, doing this during Ramadan is wildly impressive.
Yeah, really. You got to say he's the MVP of the season so far, right? Like, yeah.
He is... Just like physically, Ramadan's tough, man. Like it's like when Enes Kanter is playing playoff basketball in Ramadan. It's mind blowing to me.
And we literally started this podcast with me talking about how this one may be hard for me because I'm not going to be able to eat for another hour and a half. This guy's not eating from sundown to sunup,
right?
or the other way around, sunup to sundown. Yeah, I think it is. Yeah, so
right.
And doing challenges, you know what I mean, like.
Yeah,
it's incredible. Props to him.
Yeah, man. As someone who participates exclusively in food related observances of his own religion, I have a lot of respect for that. You know, I don't know what his level of religiousness is, but you know, I know for me, observing certain Jewish traditions is more about being in touch with my, forefathers or whatever you want to say, and respecting traditions than it is about any deep religious thing. But it's a meaningful thing to me to fast on Yom Kippur, for example. And I think it's cool that he is holding to that, whatever it is, and also playing through it. We've talked about the ratcheting up of the intensity over the last couple of years, but there's no let up in these challenges, right? And I guess he'll be able to eat before an elimination in theory, but like, I don't know, to win challenges when you haven't been able to eat all morning and everyone else is fine, it's really impressive, and I have a lot of respect for the way he's handled it.
Yep. Man's playing challenges. He's hooking up. He's squashing beefs nominally.
Nominally. You know?
He's making, we'll call him checkers moves in the game, but
sure
he's making
is.
Moves. Yeah, I don't know. I feel like the question with Fessy is he finally just willing to embrace that he's like the heel of this show? And I don't think he's fully there,
no.
But I think he's getting there.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's had to come to grips with the fact that he's probably not going to be friends with Nelson anymore. And maybe that's part of realizing like friends are less important on this show than maybe he thought. But yeah, I have no faith that he won't screw over every single person he can as the season goes on.
Did you think there was a chance he was going to screw up a vet in week two?
100%.
Because it did seem like it was a little bit on the table. Yeah. You know what I mean? That would have been a colossally dumb move. I feel like to do the, you know, to end the detente at this point of the season with this many rookies left in the game. Yeah, it would seem like a real strategic error, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah, could be.
Was Fessy your MVP this week? I think he kind of has to be, right?
No, he doesn't have to be. Emmy is my MVP.
Emmy is your MVP. All right.
She went totally batshit. She flipped,
twice.
She completely flipped out, and then she handled herself in elimination and got it done, and then she celebrated like a total psychopath. I could not be more into this woman.
She lost points for me with the Fortnite dance after she won. It was not.
I did not recognize that as a Fortnite dance.
Okay. What do you call that? I forget what you call that. It has a name.
The floss?
The floss thing.
That's not a Fortnite thing.
Sure it is.
I mean, it's a real world thing first. Fortnite.
Why do you think all the little kids do it?
Because it's a dance. It's a popular dance in the world.
Yeah, it's got popular on Fortnite.
I don't believe that's true.
Okay, well, take my word for it.
Now I'm Googling the floss.
Okay. I have a lock for Burn of the Week. Do you also have a lock?
The floss dance originates from an Instagram famous American schoolboy, 16-year-old Russell Horning, known as the Backpack Kid.
I didn't say it was the original place. I said that's where it blew up. It happened at the same time as Fortnite was blowing up, and it's in Fortnite. You know what I mean? Anyway.
The dance was used on NBC's The Good Place before it hit Fortnite. So I think that officially means...
I mean, I think the vastness of Fortnite in the culture, and as much as I love The Good Place... dwarfs The Good Place, so I don't know whether I would agree with that. Anyway, I don't want to get too deep into that because it's not that important. I want to talk
about
Burn of the Week.
It's pretty important. When the floss originated and whether Fortnite was part of it is pretty important to me, but okay, we can move on.
We can pick it up on offline.
All right, sounds good.
Give me your Burn of the Week.
Oh, man. I didn't write one down.
Okay, so this was not a lock for you.
No, you'll have to tell me what you had.
I forgot
we did Burns of the Week, so I didn't write one down.
Said deadpan. Honestly, I had forgotten too, and then I heard this. I was like, oh God, that's clearly the Burn of the Week. Said deadpan. You were not known to be the smartest, most tactical person.
Oh,
in the
room. Yes. No, that's it. You're right. Kells was like, listen, if I was making deals, you are not the one who would figure it out. Like, that was good.
So great.
Yes.
I thought Kells was amazing in a really difficult situation. Like, didn't back down at all. You know what I mean?
He's definitely coming back if he wants it.
100%. 100%. He's like, they will, yeah. It's hard
to
do that.
And I think, you know, like we said, he couldn't really do anything because the rest of the rookies are not locked in like he is. But he completely, like, he was not fooled for a minute. Like, the whole plan that Josh and Fessy designed, Kells, like, listed it off word for word as soon as they started to try to execute it. He's like, oh, so this is what you're doing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. Kells, good on Kells, man.
I hope we
see you next season.
Yeah, I don't think you can make someone who gets eliminated the MVP, but he was on the ballot.
Yeah, agreed. It was... It was a Jerry West performance, right? Jerry West is the guy that won MVP on the losing team.
I believe that's right. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think Torrey also really wishes that he comes back too.
Man, I'm worried about Torrey. I just want her to do well. She does look like she put on 10 or 15 pounds of muscle. Like she looks yoked.
Did you see that she has an OnlyFans?
No, I don't totally understand what OnlyFans is.
Like,
I mean, I know it's porn largely, but I don't know that it's totally porn. So like what
it's
does
not she... totally porn.
Right. So like, I don't think she's porn on her. I don't know.
Well, hers is definitely blurring the line. I would say,
really?
I don't know because it's like $30 a month, to subscribe. So I have not subscribed. So I can't tell you if there's nudity on there.
Can I ask you, do you have, is there like a thing, like how does it? Do you subscribe to some OnlyFans pages?
Yeah, I subscribe to some OnlyFans pages.
Interesting. Okay. So is it like a, do you have to get like an OnlyFans membership and then you pick within, like, how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, it's free to, you just, it's free to have an OnlyFans.
Oh, okay.
And then you pay for, right, like, you know, some, a lot of people are free. You don't have to pay to follow them, but some people charge you a monthly fee to follow, and hers is a lot. So I didn't do it.
Yeah, but 30 bucks a sexy, month is.
Sexy pictures.
It's, you know, an awful, I mean, that's, lot.
It's definitely that. I don't know how sexy, but sexy.
For sure.
Here's what she wrote on Instagram. Hi friends, I know it may come as a shock to some of you that I'm starting an OnlyFans, so I wanted to share some insight on why I decided to do it. One, money. Two, a platform to express my sexy side. Three, my family and friends are supportive. I have my boundaries spelled wrong of what I will and will not post, and that's all that matters. To all the people who support me and everything I do, thank you. Interesting.
There you
go. I don't know what to make of that. It seems like it's more just like lingerie than porn, but good for you if you wanna do lingerie and make money off it. God bless.
Yeah, look, I have no problem she's doing nudity. You know, who am I to judge? I remain a Tory fan.
I'm a huge Tory fan. All I want is success and happiness for Tory Deal. That's how I look at it.
Yeah. Do you feel a championship in the cards for her?
Like I said, I'm worried about her, man.
I feel like there's another level she needs to hit that. You know what I mean?
Maybe, but I also just think she got into a sort of a tough spot of being this incredibly feared and respected competitor. So she gets targeted a lot.
She does. I think she also, I think her mouth got in trouble with rookies in years past.
Maybe, but also, like, I think, I never know how to react to that stuff, because a lot of times when people's mouths get them in trouble, at least the way Tori's has, I look at it like, she's just, like, I don't understand why everyone's so upset. She's playing the game.
Yeah, it's a pretext sometimes, right? For people doing what they want to do anyway.
Like, the whole mean girl thing from last season, right? Like, I just... Normally, I don't care to listen to challengers defend themselves, but when Anissa and Tori are like, "But that's not us," I'm like, "Yeah, guys, that's not them." Yep. Like, we've seen Mean Girls on the show, and they're not it. They were just trying to protect themselves, and like, everyone talks about who's the weakest players in the game every season, you know?
Yep.
So we've feel like that stuff's pretext just to go after Tori because people are scared of her.
We've seen some like cancelably mean girls on the show before.
Totally.
So yeah. I have one more question for you that I don't know the answer to, which is, why does everyone keep picking Devin?
I have no idea.
Is he suddenly pointing to himself every week? Because I buy that one time, but it does, right? Like we are 2 weeks now with two people who can pick basically anybody, and we're like, give me Devin.
Well, Emmy is a nutcase, so there's no telling why she made that choice.
Devin's reaction to them was always great too, so I'm not mad at it. But I'm
blanking on it now. But he also had an incredible ITM this week. Devin's at home, man. Devin is very comfortable right now, and I don't know if that's totally a good thing, but.
I don't love that he's not fighting with Big Brother, right? Like,
it takes a little bit of the
entertainment and intrigue off the table.
Nah, man, he's gonna do something. That's what he does. Like, he's going to do something that creates an explosive situation.
Yeah, I just don't like. It's like you could be taking CT, man. You know,
it makes no sense. And again, Emmy is totally insane. So. There's no explaining that one. Who was it that picked him before?
It was Michelle.
Right. I have no idea what she's doing. But I have no idea what she's doing in general.
She explained it, right? Like, Devin was like, pick me. And she's like, all right, I'm going to take the guy who wants me to be with her.
Yeah, right? I mean, that's silly. But I will say, it at least, here's where it's smart, right? You have to pick a vet.
Yes, you do.
So, you know, yeah, I think I would have picked CT, or even Kyle, but at least you're picking a vet. I mean, at least you figured out that being part of a rookie team is a disaster. And you know, that's why at the very end, Corey L., who I keep – every time I see him, I feel like he puts on 5 pounds of muscle. Like, that dude is – that he is big. He read that correctly. Like, oh, man, now I'm on a rookie team again. Like, I got to protect myself because I'm a target.
Yep. Yeah, Coryell's smart. I think smart about the game.
Coryell and Kells are the two rookies that I was like, okay, these guys can definitely hang, and one of them's already gone.
Yep, not an accident. You know what I mean? So I think Coryell's not wrong to be like, look out, and still somehow Big Bad Jamar on an all rookie team
gonna Jeremiah? Continue to
fly. Jeremiah's yeah. Going to continue to fly under the radar.
Yeah, that's a weird one. And what's funny is I hadn't thought about it until you mentioned it.
Yeah, yeah.
That's how under the radar he was.
Yeah, like when I saw him in the intro show or whatever, right. Like, you know, and I'm thinking about the way that what's-his-nuts from the Titans dominated Chance versus Pros that one year. I was like, uh-oh, look out for this dude.
Yeah.
You know? And so far, like, I don't know that he's been on camera since.
Right. No, I think he had one brief ITM during the daily challenge, but for the most part, he has flown totally under the radar, which I don't know. That might just mean he's getting eliminated next week, you know?
Yeah, it could be. Could be. But usually if you're getting eliminated next week, they want to give you a little camera time so that your elimination has some stakes or weight, right? You
know? Yeah, but on the other hand, who's he partnered with? Because on the other hand, like, Tasha. Tracy got zero television time. In fact, she got so little television time that when the elimination started, I was like, I'm pretty sure Kells and Tracy are going to lose because Tracy has not been a character on the show.
Yeah. I think I texted you this. I put together a challenge fantasy team on the.
You did.
Yes. On the challenge. Fantasy MTV official board or whatever. Right. So.
So are you competing with people you know, or you're just like,
I'm just in it, you know? Yeah. Just competing with everyone in the world pretty much.
Huh? I wish I had known about this, but I
just did it as an exercise. Well, I did that. That is the reason why I told you as I was putting it together.
Yeah, but I feel like I didn't.
It's not too late to play. You can still do it.
Oh, you could do it week to week.
Yeah. You can do it week to week. But, you know, so it's kind of like Premier League fantasy, right, where it's like you can pick anybody you want, but, you know, there's salaries and you have a budget and all that, right? So I wanted to start with, CT and Fessy, right?
Okay.
And those are $15 players, which basically meant from there on out I could afford one player that was more than $5, and then everyone else is going to be $5. So I took a $5 guy, which was Kells. Pretty good selection, although it didn't wind up not paying points, right? And then I have a whole team full of $5 girls. So I took Esther, great pick,
solid.
Tasha, nice. Not hasn't paid anything yet, but I see some potential there. My third pick, who's your third pick's on your bench, is Lauren, who
gone.
Who not only is gone from the game without being eliminated, just kind of like, I don't think we ever saw her, right? Like, she's somehow even more anonymous than Tracy. So
correct. I don't even know who she is. But I gotta believe that's COVID, right?
Yeah, I think you gotta think so. She was from, like, Love Island too, apparently.
American Love Island.
She's from England, so I'm gonna assume not from American Love Island.
Oh, then I probably know who that is. Hold on.
Hometown, Oxford, England.
Lauren Coogan. She was edited out of the show, yeah. I got gaslit and scapegoated, she says.
Ooh, so that sounds like not COVID. To me.
Hold on.
They just something happened, they just decided not to even have it at all. What that sounds like to me.
It doesn't say. Oh God, I do remember her. She was barely. Uh, Interesting.
Yeah, I'm hoping this isn't going to pop up with some pop-ups and stuff, but now I'm going to find out.
Here's what she said. I don't really want to answer why I was edited out because it was so traumatic and led me into a lot of therapy and counseling and the worst time of my life. Yikes.
Sounds like whatever it was kind of a big deal, right?
I guess she was accused of
saying something racial to Anissa.
Oh, is that what it is?
Yeah. Allegedly, sorry. Let me walk that back a little bit. Popular spoiler account, Pink Rose claimed the producers disqualified the UK native due to an allegedly racially insensitive remark towards veteran Anissa during a party in the house.
I think that sounds about right.
So, there you go.
Interesting.
Yeah, that is interesting. So anyway, probably not a good selection for your fantasy team.
No. I'll tell you what. Yep. Tough.
It is tough.
I wonder if we'll hear from Anissa on that.
It's a good question, actually, to be honest, since she's doing the official podcast that may be it. Go. Because I got to get going here soon. Do you have a thought about who's in control of the game? I mean, I guess you got to say Fessy right now, right?
Yeah. I mean, with the Big Brother Alliance, to the extent that it exists.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting because Fessy and Josh clearly are, working together, but Casey's sort of, laying low. We didn't even get to Casey's romance.
Yeah. Casey and Nani, huh?
Yeah. Sounds like it's going to be a thing.
Yeah. Interesting.
It is.
Yeah, it's... I don't know what to think about that. It's unclear. Like, Nani... Nani's a weird one, man. Nani's a weird one.
Yeah.
I wish them all the best. I hope it works out for those two crazy kids.
I do too, but I expect it's going to blow up in some way, shape, or form. That's just my guess.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's talk about homework. We're going to watch more Challenge.
We're definitely going to watch more Challenge.
We have already watched Malice at the Palace.
Yep.
Untold Malice at the Palace, I can think is the official title of it.
On Netflix.
We're going to talk about that next week. So if you haven't seen it on Netflix, check that out.
Really good documentary.
Some great buzz on the Hulu show Reservation Dogs.
Yeah.
Actually, I think it's an FX show.
But so FX is on Hulu.
Yes. So watch that one. And Netflix has a new Sandra Oh show called The Chair, Sandra Oh and Jay Duplass. Executive produced by Benioff and Weiss, who did a little show called Game of Thrones that you may have watched.
Yeah, boy, if you were thinking, well, it's probably like Game of Thrones, boy, are you wrong.
Yeah, it's set in a, it's a college faculty situation, so.
Yep.
Yeah. I'm hoping there's some
swords.
Some palace intrigue, scheming in the Game of Thrones tradition. Like, that'd be cool. Yeah, I'd be down for that.
Yeah, I don't know what to think. I'm a little worried that we're just going to... It's going to be a long referendum on women in academia, but let's find out.
I think it's going to be. I think it may be more racial politics and cancel culture type stuff, for at least from what I've heard about it.
Interesting.
So we shall see there. Okay, and that's it for the week. Unless you got anything else you want to add.
I can't wait to watch more Challenge. That's all I got.
Stop saying F boy.
Fuck boy. Bye.
This game's in the Admiral refrigerator. The door is closed. The light's out. Butter's getting hard. The eggs are cooling. And the jello is jiggling.
So long, everybody.
And do me a favor. Have yourself a tremendous evening.